From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is Cool Science Radio.
Science and technology that's accessible and entertaining.
If we can understand it, you can understand it.
I'm Lynn Ware Peake.
And I'm John Wells. Our next guest is Marcus Gerhardt. He's the co-founder and the CEO of BlackRock Neurotech, which is a biotech company based in Salt Lake. BlackRock conducts research on brain-computer interfaces, BCI, that may one day help patients who suffer from paralysis, ALS, or stroke to help them walk, to talk, to feel again. Marcus, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Thank you very much, John and Lynn. It's a pleasure. Our family's been a longtime supporter of KPCW, and I never really thought I'd be able to provide the content.
Oh, well, we're delighted to have you on the program. We're fascinated with the subject matter and also with what your company is up to. Maybe we can start with this. You're the founder and you're the CEO. Tell us how BlackRock came together.
Yeah, I'm in fact not the founder. I'm the co-founder together with Florian Zolzbach, a professor up at the University of Utah. And that's really where it all starts. More than three decades ago, Florian and I met at high school. And it was the kind of high school where people exchanged what they wanted to do later in life and what aspirations they had. I didn't really know, but Florian responded, to my now wife at the time. He responded to her and said, I want to create the link between bionic and artificial limb. And I was very impressed by him having this early vision so soon in his life. And when he approached me to start a company in this space, I had to agree. I've always been a big believer in that vision of his. And so in 2008, we acquired some assets here in Salt Lake City. He was already professor at the U, and we acquired some assets, which included the Utah Array, this very small microchip electrode array that was invented in Utah by Dick Norman in the late 80s, and started building our company.
Oh, fascinating. And what is your mission at BlackRock?
Our mission, even back then, was to help people walk, talk, hear, and see again. Both Florian and I, for personal reasons, are very motivated by restoring function to those that either have lost it or have lacked it since birth. And so that has been an underlying mission for both of us ever since we started the company. And today, I'm happy to say that we're closer to achieving than ever before and have a relatively clear line of sight of how to have people move again. And you might have seen some of the videos out there of what I refer to as the BCI pioneers, quadriplegic or tetraplegic patients who, with the help of our technology and some fantastic research institutes worldwide, leading centers here in the U.S. like Pittsburgh, like Stanford, JHU, Caltech, just to mention a few, together with them have just found some fascinating discoveries. We've had Nathan Copeland, who has been able to move a prosthetic arm. He is paralyzed from the neck down following a car accident, and with that prosthetic arm was able to fist bump, then shake Barack Obama's hands when he met him. In fact, he even had sensors in that prosthetic arm that sent signals back into his brain, telling him that the hand he was shaking was slightly warm and maybe a bit moist. He comments on this to Barack Obama, and Barack Obama turns around and says, look, I'm a lot more nervous about meeting you than you are about meeting me. and many examples like that. Jan Sharman, who also tetraplegic following a neurodegenerative disease, takes her desire was always to feed herself some chocolate. And she grabs a bar of chocolate and bites off a bit of chocolate just by thinking it and moving the prosthetic arm by that way. So just some phenomenal discoveries of the last few years, which make us believe that we're very close to providing a commercially available product that will allow the restoration of function.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're speaking with Marcus Gerhardt. He's a co-founder and CEO of BlackRock Neurotech. It's a biotech company based in Salt Lake City. And Marcus, these stories are amazing. Oh, first off, I wanted to ask you, you've used this word a couple of times that I'm not familiar with. I know what a quadriplegic is, a paraplegic, and you've used the word tetraplegic. What does that mean?
That means that the English and the American language, when sourcing Greek and Latin, got it a bit wrong. So strictly speaking, it should be tetraplegia, but we made it into quadriplegia at some stage or other. So the two terms are being used intermingly, but tetraplegia would be the most correct one, and it means that somewhere in between C4 and C6, an individual lost communication in the neck, and so either broke their neck, severed nerves there, and they then have a loss of function, usually of all four limbs. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, depending on which of the C's it hits, they are able to use shoulders. So we have Ian Burkhart out of Ohio. He had a surfing and a swimming accident, breaking his neck. He has some upper shoulder mobility, but no ability really in his hands. And he was part of a study at Battelle in Ohio. Again, the Utah Array implanted BlackRock technology inside, as it were, implanted in his brain, picking up signals, and it allowed him to take a glass, for example, of water and bring it to his mouth and drink, play toy guitar, or swipe a credit card for an internet purchase. So really bringing back mobility to his hands and his full arms.
That's just incredible. And so with this implant, which it's fascinating to me that you talk about how this was really created and invented here in Utah in the late 80s. Dick Norman, was that the correct name? What a story, and how long it has taken to get to the place that we are now, where people are just starting to get movement back after being paralyzed. What do you think has taken so much time? With the advancements in technology that we have, we can send people into space, we can direct a rocket and then direct it back to its landing or launch pad. Why have we not solved this problem?
And that's a great question, and there are so many answers to that, and I don't profess to have them all. But in essence, it goes to the heart of medical device, hardware medical device development, which is just not easy. It requires a lot of foundation. It's not, a SaaS kind of approach. You build some software for 3 months and, maybe it works. If it doesn't, you dispose of it and you try the next thing. That's just not how hardware engineering works, and you need many years to get it right. We are talking, after all, about the harshest environment that we know, the human body. While some people might think shooting something to space or the moon or Mars is the biggest challenge we face, and in other ways, making fully implantable devices that can be inserted in the human body is one of the toughest challenges. So I would say that we can't underestimate how difficult that is. You have to consider the materials you use and how biocompatible they are. And so, the Utah Array is a great example. Yes, it's been around for 2-3 decades, but it has required us to spend a lot of time to make it more manufacturable, to make it more scalable, to, in fact, make it last in a human body for up to 7 years, which we've proven, to make it last in non-human primates for up to a decade, which we have proven. All of these things require time. They require a pioneering attitude among a whole host of communities, so not just us as business drivers or as engineers, but also among scientists, among researchers. We wouldn't be where we are today without our research community that took on a very pioneering attitude and tried this out, with very limited support from the FDA, but some, and went ahead and really pushed the envelope on what is possible. So it just requires a lot of pioneering of so many different actors and entities. And then finally, it requires funds. And that's maybe the element that has held us back for the last 10 years, most of all. The access to funding for this kind of thing was relatively limited. It really relied a lot on government support. So, my thanks go out to the U.S. government, to other governments the world over who have supported, be it through NIH or DARPA, funding many of the projects that we have used to further this technology. And today, and that's the big difference to maybe 2008 when we started this company, we have access to a much larger pool of funds, of interested capital that wants to invest in this and wants to make this a reality.
It's all very exciting, Marcus. And today we just pick up our smartphones and we make calls anywhere we want in the world. And sort of going back to an Alexander Graham Bell moment, a few years ago. In 2017, the first text was sent by Dennis DeGray, and he sent it to a friend. And he said, "You are holding in your hand the very first text message ever sent from the neurons of one mind to the mobile device of another." And that's just the beginning, isn't it?
John, that's very true. That is the beginning. And you can even turn the clock back a little bit further to 2006, 2007, when Matt Nagel, who was the first BCI pioneer, managed to do that in creating an email and sending an email. And you can see, right, it then took another 8, 9, 10 years to further to the next level. But to now connect with mobile devices is absolutely fundamental to why the timing is now right. Mobile technology and just the general advancement of technology, as you pointed out, Lynn, is extremely supportive now also of us pushing forward our endeavor of getting a medical implantable medical device in place. We needed much better software capabilities to analyze the data that we get from neurons. We have devices in the market that collect up to 384 signals from neurons. The data quantity is enormous. In an hour and a half, we record with a patient or a BCI pioneer 1.5 CD-ROMs. I mean, you can just imagine the size of the data. So we need much better software. We need much better processing power to be able to calculate all of this and have what we call closed-loop feedback. So systems that record data from the neurons, send it out to then affect an arm, or let's say one day an Excel program, and have Ian, who would really like to be an accountant, connect directly with an Excel program and be as fast as I am as an able-bodied person running his accounting schemes in Excel. And then again, this data coming back, so feeling something, as Nathan did with sensors in a prosthetic arm, and sending signals back into his brain to let him know what he feels. I mean, these are profound human experiences, but they rely on a lot of technology, not just the electrode that we have, but the implant and then software and mobile devices to make it all happen and move forward. So yeah, I think it's fantastically exciting times that we live in.
Not too long ago, Max Hodak, who was a co-founder of Elon Musk's Neuralink company, left the company. Is that a normal move within technology firms, or was there something really behind that?
To be honest, I don't know the motivation behind that, and overall, my policy is not to comment on other people's endeavors. My focus is BlackRock and what we have as a vision and a mission, and making sure that we do the best to make that a reality and have patient impact. What I would say is that, you know, I'm enormously grateful for Elon Musk having made this his focus with the increased public awareness. As I always say, rising tides benefit all boats. Mm-hmm. And we, like many other small or conceptual, all the way to, in our case, businesses that are already at commercialization stages, will benefit from that. The team that Neuralink had amassed has included some of the brightest minds along the way. And we've seen quite a few people come and go, and obviously Neuralink and Elon Musk experimenting what the best team is. And they'll have different priorities at different times. And so I don't think it's very unusual, but there seems to be quite a high turnover. But given the steep challenge we all face, and Neuralink faces, they've got a lot of catching up to do. I can see why they might have to change out management every now and then and try even harder. They've got, somewhere between 5 and 10 years to catch up on us. So they've really got to work a lot harder than even we did.
It's great to have that kind of competition in this marketplace. And we do know that, you know, Elon Musk, he grasps at, you know, he reaches for the stars, I mean, both literally and figuratively, and makes this stuff happen. BlackRock has made this stuff happen. BlackRock Neurotech, I should say the full name of your company. And I just wanted to, you know, you mentioned in the beginning that you co-founded this with someone from the University of Utah, and how important the research community is. And I'm assuming that you're talking a lot about at the University of Utah and in Utah in general. Is that why you stay here, is because of the research capability, or is it just because it's a place you choose to live?
That's another great question, Lynn. You should call this the show, the Great Question Show. yeah, it's many factors. I mean, I would say the greatest snow in the world does help. the quality of life does help enormously in us having been able to even survive the last 10 years, where we made use of phenomenal resources and could access and tap into individuals who believed in this mission and ended up working it far less than they could have if they'd moved to California or somewhere else in the world. So I'm very appreciative of the environment that Utah has given us, and yes, the access to the University of Utah, but not just, also BYU, and just overall the engineering and academic excellence of this valley has helped us enormously. Being able to tap into highly qualified resources has been one factor of our success. Without doubt, and that goes right to the quality of life. The collaboration element that you speak of was very deep with the University of Utah, and still is, and reaches into research levels, but also clinical levels. One of the most important relationships we have there, and all of them are, but is with John Ralston, who's up at the Epilepsy Center, and someone who really wants to change the state of technology for epilepsy applications. And we want to support him in providing the best possible technology to do so. And so the levels of collaboration have gone beyond even research and approached the clinical side, and they go beyond Utah and have been U.S. and Europe-wide. That is one critical element of our success, and it's something we celebrate, that level of collaboration. And you started the question with the concept of competition, which I do believe is important, but I feel that of collaboration is equally so. In this kind of pioneering environment that we're in, I might even say that pioneering, that collaborative element is more important, because there is so much knowledge around. And rather than reinventing the wheel or being in competition with each other and closing avenues, we should be open to them all, ideally, and pursuing many more, because we never know which one's really quite going to work out. So that's kind of our stance, that collaboration is critical, and we're very thankful for the level of support we've received from the research community and our clinical partners as well.
That's a great point that you make. And I just wanted to mention that your website, blackrockneurotech.com, on the homepage, you have a wonderful photo of President Obama with his hand out, kind of considering his hand, and with the gentleman who you mentioned that has the new use of his arm after being a tetraplegic or quadriplegic, as we say here. So it's a wonderful photo if folks are interested. A lot of interesting information on your website as well. I wanted to ask you about the numbers. I mean, we talked about how soon the commercialization of your product, you know, will be made available. Currently, it's sort of under, pilot test mode on several dozen people around the world, many of whom are using your technology. Can you talk about the numbers?
Yeah, that's right. So at this point, of the 31 or so chronically implanted invasive brain-computer interfaces that are around, 29 BCI pioneers or patients have our technology inside. So at this stage, we have a real market leadership position there. And I think the way you described is a great way. It's kind of a pilot testing way. These are still in the dozens of patient numbers. And obviously, it's Florian and my endeavor that our vision starts becoming reality and the patient number increases. So we believe we have technology that works. And from our perspective, rather than now developing the perfect, fully implantable wireless solution, which we are also doing, we want to take the product that works today, that provides some patient benefit to the market. So we just received notice that we can start moving towards that, and we are intent by 2022 to provide a brain-computer interface commercially to benefit hundreds and thousands of patients. And from there we go to increase the patient numbers severalfold. At the end of the day, even expanding beyond brain-computer interface spaces to neurological disorders at large. That's a 600 million patient population. It's a cost in the U.S. alone of $800 billion a year. It dwarfs the cost of cardio, which is at $200, $250. And so we're of the opinion that a lot of the medical device technology is really in the stone ages there, and it has to change. It has to upgrade. And we believe that our platform will be useful for many of these applications, possibly to treat depression, possibly to treat, some of the topics that you've made a focus of your show in the past. We're convinced that implants will help for many of these neurological disorders. So it's our hope that we will be able to have effects with our technology platform, hundreds of millions of patients one day.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, thanks for joining us. We're speaking with Marcus Gerhardt. He's the co-founder and CEO of BlackRock Neurotech. It's a biotech company based in Salt Lake. BlackRock conducts research on brain-computer interfaces, BCI, that are helping patients who suffer from paralysis, ALS, or stroke to walk, talk, and feel again. You know, Marcus, the product and the research and all the things that you're doing is of course so important, but the other thing that you're doing is that you're shining a light on the future and you're offering hope to people that are suffering. What sort of feedback have you gotten in that area?
Yeah, John, it's a really tough one. I mean, it motivates me personally, it motivates Florian. I think it motivates most of our workforce. When we're up at 2 or 3 in the morning trying to get a product finished and out the door to support a BCI pioneer in the research institute working with them, the motivator is not salary. The motivator is that we have patient impact. But at the same time, we have to be extremely mindful of the expectations we set. And so while, yes, we are shining a light on what the future may hold, I think we have to be very critical in assessing what message of hope we send. So, that's the part where I just felt it's important to our success and better and improved communication that we put in place an ethics board. So we're currently devising an ethics board that will just provide feedback to Florian, to myself, to senior management, as to what is ethically correct in terms of our actions and our communications. Because some of these things will take time. And while obviously I'd be more than happy to support that hope, I do want to manage expectations correctly and indicate that our technology platform today can address a limited number of patients, can address some applications, but technological advancement will still be required, which we're diligently working on, to then really affect much larger patient populations. So, for example, we're working on a project that was kicked off this year called N-Train, and it is to help regulate the circadian rhythm. So ultimately, an implant that uses peptides to help manage something like jet lag or any other function of the body that is connected to the circadian rhythm. This is still very much in the concept and testing phase. And while our partners in this have made some great discoveries, it's going to take a while. But again, right, we're back to the same principle, which is an implantable technology platform that helps regulate certain parts of the body and the brain to address neurological disorders and improve patient lives.
And maybe you can talk about the living pharmacy piece of that.
Yeah, so that's what N-Train is. Officially called N-Train, I prefer referring to it as living pharmacy because in some ways, what the idea and the concept, the really broadest concept behind it is that we have an implant, and it could be in the brain, it could be elsewhere in the body, and very much like a pacemaker that today so many people benefit from, even in a prophylactic manner, this implant can help us directly access certain biomarkers and certain things in the body. So in the case of the N-Train and circadian project, it would release peptides that affect the circadian rhythm and allow maybe, let's say, for service personnel in the military who might have to be at full operation at any time of the day or night to regulate that and be fully awake when they need to be and not just based on whether it's dark or light. There could be an application for jet lag, for example, but you could also envisage other applications where we need to regulate certain chemicals in the body in order to treat depression or other neurological disorders. So the idea is you have an implant, and instead of now having to run to the pharmacy and take medication that will generally impact the entire body, we start in a much more precise manner, affecting really the things that is causing the disorder or the disease that that we're facing. That is, at the broadest level, the idea behind a living pharmacy. It's really electronics joining with biology, and electronics joining up maybe with pharmaceutical companies in future, so that we can better address disease states.
Marcus, we are almost out of time, but promise us that you will come back and talk to us again, because this is a fascinating subject. In our own backyard, 29 out of 31 implants have been done by your company. So we want to keep our eye on what you all are doing. Well, we thank you for joining us this morning. I have just a very quick question. I understand that in response to inserting neural implants, that the brain can build up scar tissue around the electrodes, which can degrade the signal quality. Is that something that that you're able to get around?
Yes, and it's one of many things that we have been looking at over the last decade, and it's why we have such a competitive advantage at this stage, that we have, through our research partners, been able to see many of these things happen. And a glial response, which is what you're referring to, and the building of scar tissue is one. We've managed to address that, and the Utah Ray, as a core component of our BCI device, has worked for up to 7 years in human patients. Really, nobody else can point to that kind of statistic. It will remain a bit of an issue, given that this is an implant, right? It's a foreign body entering the human body, and so it's going to be tough to avoid that. And our method of dealing with it is to accept that that might be happening or is a risk, and how best to get around that. But I feel we've found a pretty good solution for now, and obviously our continued endeavor is to develop and commercialize products that is as minimally invasive as possible. And we definitely have some ways to go, but what we're encouraged by is that our devices work today, that they can improve the quality of life today. And at the end of the day, that's what counts most importantly for us. We believe we should be listening to these patients and servicing them, not always just the clinical environment or the med device companies. So that's our vision, and that's what we're going to push.
This morning, and we'll talk to you soon.
I'd love to. John, then thank you very much for all you do in your show. I love it, and look forward to more exciting science topics.
Thanks,
thank
Marcus.
Thank you, Marcus. Thanks for tuning in to Cool Science Radio.
If you enjoyed this episode, please rate us, give us a 5, and leave us a comment.
Take us along on your next adventure to the moon.
If you have any story ideas, please let us know at coolscienceradio@kpcw.org.
Thanks for listening, and hey, tune in next week.